Lil, put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
Here I stand and face the rain. Aha. Yeah. Morten Harket, a Norwegian band, which kind of foreshadows the next edition of Resonance Rewind, as I actually go straight away to Jessica Burtis. Jessica, welcome to this Midweek Drive special. And just out of interest, can you recognize the catfish that are in the shot behind me, and have you got any idea what that might be part of as yet?
I have no idea. I know you mentioned squid were going to be included in this coming Residence Rewind. Yeah. Catfish like terrify me. They're very scary. So I don't recognize it.
Yeah, giant catfish, even more scary. It's all part of the aquatic scenario. Don't worry, I was in tears this afternoon. I was watching an episode of Sequest DSV when Darwin was actually poorly. We're not looking at that because it would be just too emotionally overwrought for the whole thing. But
Was that the one due to something bad in the water, dark water or something?
Yeah, with Roscoe Lee Brown, amongst other things. But here we are shooting the breeze over the giant catfish in next week's episode of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea that we're working through. Don't worry, Jessica, you can blink and you'll miss the giant catfish. So it's not a significant side of things there. There are other squid aspects that are actually there as well. And talking about squid, we welcome, of course, another ace soul who's come on board back to the Midweek Drive. She's just altogether awesome. It's Gemma Joy. How are you, Gemma?
Hello, I'm well, thank you. Well.
A triple well cubed, as we like to say. And keeping us well to the nth degree, Robin Pierce is with us. How are you, Robin?
Hi, good evening, or afternoon, or even morning, depending when you're listening.
It's the Midweek Drive in September doing our stuff. Robin, can we share your little news with the public as yet, or is it a case of, no, we can't share this at all?
Well, the time has come for me to announce that I am indeed pregnant.
I knew you were going for woke characteristics, but maybe not to that extreme. Again, if you have to plead the Fifth Amendment, that's okay. But if not, I can't.
No. You may, if you're in the UK, be seeing my visage on your television sometime soon, as I have been accepted as an on-screen reviewer in the BBC's Point of View show. So it'll be on an as and when needed basis, depending whether they need me a certain week or not. But that's something that I had a telephone conversation with them this morning, and it's all done and dusted.
So a round of applause for Robin Pierce, who actually continues to do various sort of other media work for organisations that aren't quite as friendly as Siren Radio or Southside Broadcasting, but nevertheless still have some kind of latitude.
Whether I'm going to fit in there is an entirely different question.
Fun fact, Robin Pierce, the budget that Reith and company set up the British Broadcasting Company with back in 1922, nigh on 100 years ago from now, was exactly the same budget as Siren Radio launched with full-time in 2007. 60,000 English pounds. Those were the key things. Siren Radio is still actually sort of having a little bit to actually grow in terms of developing, but are still our range of things. As Gemma will attest to, of course, being one of our sort of founding souls, etc. The quality is still there. So, Gemma, what have you been getting up to recently? Because it's been quite a while since we connected with your good self. So what exciting things have been going through you? And have you also seen giant catfish outside in the waters of the North Sea?
I'm quite concerned about the giant catfish now, because one of the things I've been doing, amongst being constructively deconstructing things around the house, a garage was knocked down today. It's quite cathartic, not by myself, by some other people. I've been swimming in the North Sea. I have been, when we had summer, the last vestiges of summer, I had a little bit of yoga and meditation and reflection on the beach, and some chanting was done, and then we swam in the North Sea, and it was really warm, and I'm just really glad that I hadn't seen that image of the catfish before I swam in the North Sea.
Well, I take the image of the catfish down and I go to an image of 21st century New York City, because we were concerned about our New York correspondent extraordinaire, ace musician, of course, and general all-round wonderful soul, Pamela Suman. Pamela, you're not wearing the snorkel. Are you safe enough in New York City?
Okay. Are these noises crazy that you're hearing?
We can barely hear anything at present, but I presume you're asking us, can we hear the rain?
There's no rain. It's actually quite sunny. You can't really see it. It looks like winter, but it's beautifully sunny. It's cool. And where we are, I took a little jog and a recce outside to see, you know, the carnage. You can't even tell in our neighborhood that anything happened. But I stayed up late. And as you'll know, Robin and Alex, I kept pinging you images because it was really very unreal what was happening. And I actually sent my daughter off in a car to a party. So she was on the road between 9 and 10 during the worst of it. And as you may know, you know, between probably 9 p.m. here and midnight, there was flash flooding, much like Tennessee and of course Louisiana. And we just weren't expecting it. We were really expecting Henry. So we took a lot of precautions for that. And then that was, Jerry was saying it was a terrible storm in the sense it was a dud. I think he was expecting a really big storm. And then this one caught us unawares because we were just expecting some rain. And then it just got worse and worse.
Yeah, of course, this one is Ida, as opposed to Henry, as we move alphabetically through the whole sequence on that basis. Jessica, any questions for your fellow American? Or is it just a case of, well, I'm in Ireland, so frankly, I don't care anymore?
I hurricane season is never fun. It's definitely not. The East Coast takes so many beatings during storm season. So I'd have to ask Pamela, are there like a lot of like precautions that you guys have to take in New York for that? Because I guess I usually thought that New York was like kind of a bit more like protected in a way. I don't know why I thought that, but it is pretty close to the ocean, depending on where you are. So is there like anything that your city implements or something like that?
Well, I only found out through Henry. That's a good question, Jessica, because we don't think about these things until we do. And we've never really historically, you know, in Massachusetts, or we've worried about other things, more winter storms than anything. But as of late, and of course, you know, throughout time, there have been storms. However, I found out with Henry, where I live is in zone 2. And I think it's really good to educate ourselves about this because no, I mean, we just noticed the other day, we were taking a walk and we saw the sign that said something like, flood evacuation zone 2, and it was up in between. I think we took Alex, I'll send you the picture. It's hysterical. You can't see it. It's behind 3 other poles, and it's been there for a really long time. But no, I guess the short answer, Jessica, is no, not until something is pending. And as we all know, mm-hmm. much of New York City is not that high up. The sea mm-hmm. level is pretty low, so you know, I wouldn't buy property down in Battery Park anytime soon.
I mean, let's turn to Gemma. I mean, it makes our kind of time on the east coast of England mild by comparison if all you've got to worry about is catfish in the North Sea. But, you know, other than that, anything you'd like to sort of throw into the mix? I mean, we were looking at some of the images that were coming across of the subway stations, of the torrential rain that was actually working through cars that were floating through the sort of sequence. And I'm thinking, look, you know, this is a bit of an overambitious trailer for the next climate change conference, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking about this today because in London we've got Extinction Rebellion active again, and I don't know how much Jessica and Pamela you're aware of Extinction Rebellion, but they obviously are at the forefront of the climate change advocacy movement, but they do tend to have some extreme ways of going about activism. So this one hasn't been too extreme, but I think there's some sentiment that they are, rather than raising awareness, trying to sort of, they're actually pulling people away from the feel of climate change. But actually, somebody today came up with a great analogy to talk about the way they're doing it is as if we're all partying on the Titanic with our drinks. The iceberg is climate change, and Extinction Rebellion are standing on the poop deck shouting about it, letting us all know, and we're just going, could you pipe down please, because we want to dance in our fancy frocks with our cocktails. Then something's got to happen before people realize that this is what life's going to be like. Life's going to be that, where is there a flood, where is there flash flooding, and it's going to be everywhere soon. So I think that was quite timely that you know, this is all happening at the same time, because obviously it's linked, but I think some of us are just still blind to it.
Absolutely. You know, as examples, you know, there were several boys and girls, maybe about 20, I'm not even sure, partying, you know, in an apartment with the parents. Last night, seven of them got stranded because they lived out in Brooklyn and they had to stay over. My daughter got really nervous at about 9:30 and she said, I think I need to go home. And thank God she did. But I mean, these kids are, you know, they, in one sense, just like COVID and climate change and everything, people really just want to live their lives and don't want to live in fear. But I think the more affirmations that we have of all these things are getting increasingly wonky around us, the more, you know, we perk our heads out. But I don't know about all of you, but I feel like I'm trying to balance the idea of trying to live a normal life, whatever the new normal is, with trying to be aware and not trying to live in constant fear.
Well, it's certainly critical stuff there, Pamela, because after this piece, we're speaking to Helen Glover, MBE, two-time Olympic champion, triple world champion, and quintuple World Cup champion when it comes to the Great British Rowing Team. Well, you've got to actually sort of ensure you've got the best athletes to actually deal with water if you want to have sort of rowers involved with that. But Helen's going to be talking about a really crucial factor, which I want to certainly sort of, as mother's people, both find Gemma's and Pamela's insight on this, and Robin, obviously, for the parental sort of perspective, it's competitive lunchboxes. Can I ask you, I mean, Gemma, we'll come to you first. Did you ever get the sense, I mean, with your children, were they ever actually keen for their mum to actually sort of just outdo other parents when it comes to preparing the lunchbox for returning to school? I mean, was it star-shaped sandwiches? Was it the sort of overall thing? What kind of lunchbox did you prefer? Or was it just a case of you should just be happy for the apple and that's all you need?
Before lunchboxes started, I was a keen advocate of school dinners, and we will not be doing anything different. And I have not got time for lunchboxes. But lunchboxes came in, and I relented, and so I don't get competitive. I make sure she's got everything, but I think I would probably feel the pressure of other parents knowing what I put in the lunch, because there would be judging going on. And I'm not saying that I'm judgy, but we're all a little bit judgy, and I probably would judge other people's lunchboxes. So there is an element of competition, whether it's subversive. I often put little notes in mine as well, and sometimes they can get a bit close to the bone. And one time I put one in that had a little swear word in, because it's an in-joke at home. So I hope that people don't look in the lunchbox. They should be private. Lunchboxes should be private.
Yeah, it's interesting. The notes is a very popular aspect. I mean, I'll turn to Robin on this particular one, because back in the day, the whole notion of lunchboxes was something which was very American. We might have had like superhero decorated lunchboxes with, you know, Marvel or DC characters on the lunchbox. I mean, did you ever sort of experience the lunchbox? I mean, there was the bait box, of course, which could be used to actually go to work for working people, etc. But lunchbox, I don't know. Or packed lunch when you went on a school trip and you actually went on a long school trip to, I don't know, somewhere exotic like Battersea Quaid, for instance, which is very exotic in its day. Robin, any thoughts from yourself?
Well, I never had a lunchbox because I walked home for my lunch. I didn't actually have a lunchbox as such.
So you didn't have to catch your own lunch then?
No. The sheep were a bit too nippy for me, and I don't like eating them raw. When I was working, I had a lunchbox. In fact, the final one that I had was actually a Star Wars lunchbox, and I proudly carried that in my rucksack to work at the age of about 57. And I was proud of my Star Wars lunchbox. Thank you very much. Competitive lunchboxes. I don't think that Maria, my wife, ever really engaged in that. They basically had what they had, and that was the end of it.
So but Tiffany and Stephen just basically had to cope with what they were given, basically, and be grateful for it.
Well, there was one time when the kids were actually quite young, and Maria would put the sandwiches in the lunchbox, ready to be picked up. And we all had different lunchboxes. And I got to work and I found out that I had one of the kids. So imagine my embarrassment eating sandwiches with the crusts cut off. And if there ever was a little note inside my lunchbox that had a swear word on, it meant that Maria and I had argued. But what we found was extraordinarily competitive was birthday parties and the goodie bags that people were giving away. It was, you were judged on those and harshly.
I mean, Jessica, in North Carolina, did the lunchbox phenomenon serve a key part of your own growing development? Was it a case of it was one of the reasons you decided to leave the country for as long as possible?
I've used a lunchbox for as long as I can remember. I think on some days we had like good nachos at my school on Fridays, but you know, some of the school meals were not the best. So yeah, I always had my lunchbox, and I my mom would write me notes on like the banana peel that she would put in my lunchbox, and my friends would kind of like every day they would like ask what she wrote. I just remember with lunch, like we would share, if somebody got good stuff in their lunchbox, you would share it. Like if somebody had goldfish and stuff. There was some like lunchbox stealing, like where people would like steal things from other
excuse boxes. Excuse me. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Goldfish.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wait. Okay. I have a funny story about this. So goldfish are like these little baked cracker snacks in the shape of a little fish. So like cheese snacks in the US. I'm so sorry. My mom did not pack me goldfish in my lunchbox.
I was just scared that you were the victim of some sort of terrible abuse. I will put your goldfish in your lunchbox and you will eat it.
I thought it was some kind of delicacy that we should all be eating. I was just about to wait and go, yeah, I've had goldfish actually.
Little bite size. No, when I actually arrived in Ireland like a month ago, the border people like stopped me when I was walking out with my luggage, and they were like, are you bringing anything into the country that's like meat or fish goldfish. Or like food? Yeah, and I was like, oh, well, I have a bag of goldfish. And they were like, what? And I was like, get the little crackers. And he was like, okay. I was like, I only realized after. And I was like, he probably thought I had a bag full of dead fish in my bag. But no, I promise you, we had normal food. So yeah.
Certainly what I thought.
This is exactly the challenge that clearly the Northern Ireland border agreement actually has, isn't it, Gem? I mean, from your political routines, nobody thinks about the Americans and their bags of goldfish crossing the border.
I said this would happen. I said this would happen. When they sat down at Chequers before that, I said there was going to be an issue with goldfish and the trade agreements between, you know, crackers and goldfish. I said it.
Sure and no, lass. Do you be having any dead aquatic creatures in your luggage?
A bag of dead goldfish to declare. It's nothing suspicious. Don't worry. Pamela knows what I'm talking about with goldfish snacks. Yes.
No. She's humoring you. I can tell.
No.
No, they're a favorite in our household. I mean, I refused to buy them for a very long time because we moved upstate and we became hippies. And tried to, you know, breathe organic air and only eat sustainably produced by the earth, you know. And then imagine when from a play date, we love that American word, she said, or I think she had some with her in a little baggie that the mom gave to her as a little parting gift. And then I realized that she, you know, she was now loving the goldfish. And it's, as Jessica would know, it's not just the goldfish. They have pizza flavor, nacho cheese, yes. You know, creme de mint. No, I'm kidding. But they have like so many different flavors. And I have actually, have you tried?
The most surprising thing I've heard you say in this entire sequence, Pamela, is that you're breathing organic air.
It's a different kind of air, Robin. You know, in New York, upstate or downstate, they have a different kind of air. I'm sure they can monetize it as well and sell different kind of forms of air that we can almost... I mean, the kind of rarefied air that you get in Redcar, it's equally, I think, you know, commercially viable. What do you think, Gemma?
Well, there was a question actually on the radio today and I didn't sadly hear the answer. So if anybody knows this, please furnish me with the answers. Somebody asked that in, obviously, in Victorian times and Edwardian times, people were often sent to the coast for the sea air for restorative purposes to recuperate. And somebody asked the question, is the sea air actually different and how is it better? So I'd love to know the answer, because I think it's placebo effect. The sea air.
Well, not exactly, Gemma. I mean, the oxygen molecules.
It does smell different. I mean, it does smell different. Salt air. And where I live, we do have a sewage treatment plant near the sea. So it certainly smells different.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely organic.
Yeah. And the oxygen molecules do combine from O2 to O3 and split back to O2 again, thereby forming the whole ocean of ozone and oxygen as well. Hence the kind of the sea air aspect that's there. Mind you, having said that, you get that ozone production as well from the London Underground when the sparks actually ignite from the tracks as well with the electricity. That also gives you an O2-O3 relationship. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend going to the London Underground or any subway station to sniff the air. But, you know, going to the seaside, you can balance it from that.
Definitely not the New York subway unless you bring your flippers and your goggles, because some of them are submerged.
And an aqualung.
Yeah, precisely. Did you see some of the footage? I mean, it was beyond. Yeah, it's that crazy.
Torrent of water coming through. Yeah, I saw.
Standing there on their cell phones texting. Taking selfies with the water.
Can you imagine, right? If the Titanic happened now, you'd have people on lifeboats photographing it with their cell phones, while all the rest would be going, no, I don't have to wear a life raft. I've got my rights.
And so it goes.
Aren't they trying to do a Titanic though? Like they're trying to do one that's going the same route. They're trying to do like a replica, and it's going to go like the same route that the Titanic went originally.
But with an authentic iceberg as well.
People were joking that because of global warming, you don't have to worry about it, and I thought that was so sad.
Which, yeah. It is a useful thing, basically. I mean, had only there been climate change occurring in 1912, the Titanic would never have sunk.
What I'm getting from Jessica right now in an increasingly surprising program is the whole thing with global warming is it sucks to be an iceberg.
Yes. I feel for the icebergs. They're true victims here.
But Pamela, we haven't forgotten your own line with respect to competitive lunchboxes.
Oh no, I thought I'd escaped that one. Oh goodness. So,
I mean, there's gotta be a song there, surely, you know. Mom's competitive lunches.
Well, there's actually a TV show that Jerry thought would be fantastic called the Waldorf Wives. which is, you know, Steiner is a school of education which my daughter, when she was young, went to this outdoor school where you basically spend the whole day outside. And
what if it rains?
Rain, snow, everything. You're outside. You have to be outside. No, I mean, actually not the entire day. You do go inside and you take a nap. And they put lavender oil on you and rub it. It's really nice. Not us, not the parents, but the kids. So I digress. So lunch box. Well, the concept of lunch box, I mean, we're such a punk rock family that we were lucky, poor Faye, she got lunch. But if she did, we would try and put something healthy in there, and everything healthy in there, actually. And probably I would do the Jewish mother thing and just give her way, way, way too much that she could not possibly eat. And
frozen chicken soup?
A brisket?
Well, I used to take Faye out of school a lot to bring her down because she'd done a lot of acting and modeling, and we'd be in the car, and poor thing, she at one point she said, no more soup, because she had too much soup spillage, and social services is going to come knock on my door now. But plenty of chicken soup, but not in the lunch box, mostly in the car.
Well, if you're spending most of the day outside being sort of slathered over with lavender, she'd need all the chicken soup she could take, surely.
Well, absolutely. You know, after a while, mud, chicken soup, you can't really tell the difference. But basically, I remember they were saying that one girl came with some rotten grapes I think the grapes were rotten. And she was mortified because her mother gave her rotten grapes, and everybody, all the other Waldorf children, saw these rotten grapes. And
why not just give her a bottle of wine, and then you actually shortcut the whole thing entirely?
Now that's a good idea.
And so it brings us neatly round, of course, to the other side, which is the whole angle of ABBA have reunited. We're about to actually play one of their latest tracks, which has just actually been released. In fact, I mean, Gemma, were you ever an ABBA fan? I mean, I know that there are certain folk who are sort of ABBA, ABBA-nistas. So they sort of love everything that ABBA have actually done. And the very fact that we'll be actually having either Don't Shut Me Down or I Still Have Faith in You coming up next will be exciting them tremendously. What are your thoughts on ABBA getting back together into the studio again? Benny, Bjorn, Agnetta and Anne Fried. Is it as exciting to you as the next Pamela Sue Mann single release?
It's not as exciting as that, but I kind of take my hat off to anybody who can churn out hit after hit after hit while simultaneously living and working with a partner that they are indeed trying to extrapolate themselves from. I mean, like, as in Fleetwood Mac, but they choose a different route to kind of deal with that. I take my hat off to ABBA for doing that and being consistent with this successful train of musical feats that they did. So anyone who can do that absolutely is a winner. And everyone arrives at ABBA in their own way. So, you know, how if you arrive at them through a musical or your parents' collection, or, you know, the film with Meryl Streep. And so I arrived at ABBA sort of a bit earlier on and thought they were a bit naff. And then Erasure in the 80s did a couple of covers, and I loved electronic music and thought, well, actually, yeah, ABBA are quite cool, aren't they? So I think everyone, it's a little bit like the Smiths. You don't like them when you're younger and you grow into them.
Mm. Jessica, as Pamela's just put up that wonderful chemical term, sublimation, how literally a gas can turn to solid without a liquid phase occurring at all. The full chemical definition of what sublimation actually is. How much fun one used to have when you heated that carbonate in a test tube over a Bunsen burner and actually saw it literally sublime, you know, whilst watching the whole process. It was wondrous. Almost as wondrous, no doubt, as a goldfish across the border. But Jessica, what about your own journey to ABBA? Or has it not existed as yet?
So they, okay, this is embarrassing. They wrote Dancing Queen, right? Yes, okay, that's what I know of ABBA, so that's funny. I did my, like, I took a dance class because I signed up on accident. I didn't realize I'd actually have to dance, but then I had to dance, and we did our final project, Dancing Queen. And so that's what I think of when I think of ABBA. So I think of my dance class. So that sounds very fun.
Yeah, I mean, you see, Jessica, that's why you are a classic Midric driver. You take a dance class without realizing that you'd have to dance. It's genius.
I was in too deep by the time I couldn't, like, get out of the class.
Yeah. I mean, had they moved to foxtrots? Had they moved straight into the sort of Lambada? Were they actually sambering? What was the sort of routine? When was the moment when you realized, I'm in too deep now?
So for my school, it was like a liberal arts one. You had to take like a class in every discipline. And I needed for my like last semester or some point, I needed a credit for an arts class. And so there was one that was like dance appreciation. And I thought it was the class where you just like study dance, but they actually made us get up and dance. And it was contemporary. So I didn't know what was going on. I cannot dance, by the way. Like I look like a goose when I try to dance, and it was very embarrassing. But yeah, all the other classes were taken, so I was stuck with it. But you know, I did my best. Dancing Queen was there, so.
Yeah, and of course, ABBA, Dancing Queen from the album, I believe, Arrival, which was 1976 released, 2 years after, of course, they'd conquered Europe with Waterloo. They got the feeling they won the war. So it goes. I won't ask Robin because he's too much into Alice Cooper to even have thought of ABBA as being a sort of useful sort of point of things there. But, you know, Pamela, from your own experience of Benny, Bjorn, Agnetta and Anne Fried, has ABBA, you know, crossed over into the man and indeed Jerry Leonard consciousness?
We discovered ABBA, rediscovered them with our daughter. because we just realized what phenomenally good pop songs they were. However, like Robin and Gemma, I think that back in the day, you know, we just, it was not cool to like ABBA. I remember having a band in America, and ABBA was just like a dirty word, you know? But of course, you know, we were really into the much more sort of darker side, if you will. But I'd say it was a good 5 to 10 years ago now that we discovered ABBA, and boy, did we discover ABBA. We just listened to it constantly. And the one song that sticks out in my mind is Money, 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 because it's
must
very
be funny. It's a rich man's world.
I think that they were channeling Fagin. I really, really do. And I thought it was hysterical. It was just so Eastern European meets London meets, I could just see it as a little microfilm. It was just too much. I mean, such a comedy. So I'm sure there's a lot of tongue in cheek in there. And the whole idea with sublimation, in the sense of a woman who's a writer, who's a friend of his PhD, so equals very smart. I was writing all these songs after my mom died, and like a crazy person. And she said to me, "You are sublimating." And of course, I didn't even know what she meant. I had to look it up. And then I realized that sublimation is a good thing. And I'd say in the case of ABBA and in the case of Fleetwood Mac, and also helps if you have more than one writer, but sublimation, you know, the Titanic is sinking, but the songs are getting better and better, and they're being written more fast and furiously.
So just out of interest, yeah. Pamela, would you like Don't Shut Me Down or I Still Have Faith in You? Neither of which you'll have heard, so it's a complete gamble, but they're both taken from their latest album, released later on in the month of October/November, Voyage.
Oh, goodness. So these are brand new songs, yeah?
Brand new ABBA songs. Either Don't Shut Me Down, which you could say is kind of like the US economy, perhaps, back in the day, or I Still Have Faith in You.
I would say we need to play the song I Still Have Faith in You, because we need faith. We don't need to be shut down anymore. We don't need to tell people not to shut us down. We need to tell people we still have faith in them.
I still have faith in you. I see it now. Through all these years that faith lives on. Somehow there was a union of heart and mind, the likes of which are rare and oh so hard to find. Do I have it in me? I believe it is in there, for I know I hear a bittersweet song in the memories we share. I still have faith in you, and I will say I never really thought I'd feel way. But I remind myself of who we are, how inconceivable it is to reach this far. Do I have it in me? I believe it is in there. I know I hear a bittersweet song in the memories we share.
We do have it in us. The spirit has arrived. The joy and the sorrow.
I have it in me. I believe it is in them. For I know I hear a bittersweet song in the memories we share. Do I have it in me? Things we did, it all comes down to love. Do I have it in me?
Makes perfect sense. And we send best wishes, of course, to two souls who didn't manage to get across the Zoom threshold today. Eva McDonald, who's in day 8 of her isolation from COVID. It happens when you're in the entertainment business. So hopefully all's well with Eva. And, of course, fresh from her 10K run for Mind, that, of course, is the wonderful Hannah O'Brien, who is also locked up. But, Jessica, how are you feeling these days? Because, I mean, I feel that you've come back to us really from the moment Pamela Sue Mann sent you those positive vibes, you know, American to American, across the ocean, you know, after having dived off a merry-go-round, gone into mild concussion, fallen out of bed, also giving yourself a concussion, etc. Do you feel as though you're back with us now?
I think so, yes. I think I'm at the very tail end of it, so I just have a bit of exhaustion left over, but I am good. Before it was like I couldn't string together any cohesive thoughts and I couldn't really understand what people were saying sometimes, but I think I am back and I have missed seeing everyone, so it is so nice to just be back on the show and get to hear my thoughts and voices and see all of you again. I've missed it.
It's a bit like signing up for a contemporary dance class.
Cohesive thoughts, is that what you said? I've never strung together a cohesive thought in over 300 shows.
I think Jessica, I'm sorry, I had to say this because it's such a brilliant idea. Jessica, will you please choreograph a contemporary piece for us that we can all learn, and then we come back, we'll all do the piece in tandem.
That would work on radio, yeah.
You know, Robin, you always like to push those boundaries. Even if you signed up for a contemporary dance class and you end up doing jetés and pas de deux.
I think that really Jessica should have her own show on this, and you could call it Southside Stunts.
I don't need any more stunts. I don't need any more concussions.
Well, worry not, because the next Resonance Rewind will be coming up before we know where we're going, and keeping the C theme going, as we've said, for people who are actually looking through that whole process, we'll be going very much into the Village of Guilt, which, curious enough, is set in Norway, which is pretty much where we came in with Aha. Gemma, it falls to your good self as one of the 20th century midweek drivettes. Because that's when we started, of course, when you were one of my students and all sorts of other things that I know. Would you like to put those last two questions to Robin and Jessica and Pamela, starting with whomever you wish? Over to you, Gemma.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Pamela, and before she disappears into the ether of rain and floods. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoom chat with us today?
I have, and it's so nice to meet your beautiful self and to see all of you good people. And I've had a wonderful time. I'm glad that you're starting to feel better, Jessica. And
thank you.
Keep walking straight. Yes, and please may I come back.
And Jessica, yourself, albeit the delayed concussion?
Yes, I've had so much fun. We've had Titanic, we've talked about lunches, ABBA. I feel like I've had a great time.
And Robin, last but not least.
Well, it's been a great time because these broadcasts, the wide range of what we talk about and how we get there, you couldn't make it up, could you?
I always say the rehearsal period works wonders, Robin, and those 48 hours of rehearsal that we went into those topics worked extremely well.
I'm learning all my lines.
Gemma, has it been good for you?
It's always been good for me, yes.
Back again soon?
Back again soon. Hope everyone else will be.
Splendid. Gemma Joy, Pamela Suman, Jessica Burtis, and Robin Pierce, keep on keeping on. And coming up, as mentioned, Helen Glover.
Sweet tea and creativity. Time for more Jessica Burtis questions on the Midweek Drive.
You know what they call sweet tea in the South?
What's that?
Tea.
Quadruple European champion, quintuple World Cup champion, triple world champion, and two-time Olympic champion. Clearly, those are the credentials which will make you ideal to actually talk about lunchboxes. Yes, it's not a bizarre scenario. We are indeed going to be focusing on the importance of children's lunchboxes for school with the amazingly talented, as we said, two-time Olympic champion. When it comes to rowing, there is basically no one better than Helen Glover, MBE. How are you, Helen?
Hi, I'm very good, thank you.
Brilliant. Now, as I say, not only that, of course, you've also raised three young children. So that's always important from that point of view. But you're also connected with this particular focus that we're doing today, which is the importance of good nutrition and working through that. And it does seem as though, although parents care about obviously providing suitable, healthy snacks for their children, sometimes they tend to panic over what they should put into the lunchbox, etc. You have actually got a number of key aspects to deal with this very exciting thing, which is obviously the lunchbox, and hopefully more than just cheese sandwiches again.
Yeah, well, I guess as an athlete, it just kind of became part of my day as you think about what you eat and what goes into your body. And that became very natural for me to do. And now having three young children, I realised the importance of making sure that they're eating the right things. But like you say, you kind of get this panic of what on earth do I feed them? And especially if they're going off for the day to nursery or school, what do I put in that packed lunchbox? And so that's why working with Baby Bell has been really nice, because, you know, Baby Bell is a great example of something which is easy to put into the lunchbox. It's nutritionally balanced, it's got some protein and calcium in there. And for me, my other tip would be, alongside that, make sure it's colourful with fruit and vegetables. If you make it look colourful with fruit and veg, you're naturally going to be getting some great nutrition and nutrients in there as well. But also be realistic. I think you know your child, you know what they like, and so to make sure it's realistic, you kind of go with what your child, even what they like that week. We know they can change their minds every 5 minutes.
Snackspiration is the wonderful portmanteau phrase that's being used to develop this. And I mean, inevitably, the lunchbox looks like is important, which TV characters or particular sort of cartoons is on the lunchbox. Is the design of the lunchbox also important in terms of also considering what goes into it?
It probably is, actually. Yeah, I think, especially with Logan, my three-year-old, he's sort of, I realise that actually if it's his favourite colour and if it's got his favourite characters on, he's definitely far more likely to be engaged and excited by it.
Eating is important, clearly, but for children in particular, why would you actually sort of recommend, as indeed a sensational athlete, that actually ensuring you have regular nutrition, it is important for blood sugar levels and more?
Yeah, I think I always kind of start off by thinking actually exercise and being outdoors is fundamental and just so important, not only for the physical health, but for the mental health of our nation's youngsters. But that does start with good nutrition. Like you say, if you have the energy, if you have the right nutrition, the right nutrients, then that enables you to live that lifestyle of enjoying sport, enjoying being outside and being outdoors, and having the right foundations for that.
Children are returning to school. Clearly, the pandemic is still in people's minds and it's still very much to the fore. Obviously, there's concerns with respect to that. But how has that impacted on our children's eating habits? And in your own case, Helen, has it been a case of, well, you know, they've got into eating at different times, or it's a case of, no, there was a rigorous discipline maintained throughout?
You know, it's really interesting. There's been lots of studies that have said that actually children become more experimental with food because of being in lockdown. And I think it's because it's almost become a bit more of an event when, and you can't take your children out and you can't do the normal things with them. Making mealtimes more interesting has been a bit of a thing. And I think that's really, really nice and really exciting that children feel like they can be a bit more experimental with what they're eating.
Time is always precious, Helen. Have you got any suggestions to parents who might be sort of thinking, well, this is all very good for Helen, who can actually, you know, put all things together, etc. But what if we're actually looking to put this together rapidly? How can they actually sort of maximise their time to ensure that a creative lunchbox is developed?
Oh, I think that is totally key. I mean, it's never easy for anyone. And I think that sometimes you see all these beautifully put together things and you think, I just don't have the time for it. And I definitely don't either. So I think the key is keeping it simple, keeping it achievable. And it'll mean you'll be able to do it every day. So maybe planning it the night before or after the children have gone to bed, or even making an activity that you do with your child, you know, make the sandwich together, and it can kind of be a little bit of an activity together as well as just getting that practical thing done, having a lunchbox ready. But definitely just not putting too much pressure on yourself. There's, I think, so much pressure and almost comparisons between parents, and trust me, there's no easy way of parenting. And so not being too hard on yourself.
I was intrigued to find that nearly a quarter of parents claim to have felt lunchbox pride when they know they've created a fun and nutritious lunchbox for their children. I mean, can we see an Olympic sport of lunchbox making being developed in years to come?
I feel like it probably is a bit competitive actually between parents when you see what, you know, some people make these amazing lunches. But I definitely think never compare yourself to the other parent. You know your child, you know what they might eat. And I think doing what's right for your child and doing what's right for you, what you have the time for, is really important.
Again, over a quarter of parents also made their kids' shapes into their favourite shapes. I mean, that's an interesting one, because I would have thought a sandwich is a sandwich is a sandwich. But, you know, clearly, actually, whatever Baby Bell is putting together, a nice shape is important too.
Yeah, and actually, it's something that I never thought I would do. I kind of thought, no, keep it classic sandwich shape. And then as soon as you start having a fussy toddler, you realise, okay, actually, just cutting it into a star shape, maybe he'll eat it. Yeah, it's all gone. And so, yeah, I think you kind of learn these little tricks as you go.
And can you remember your own lunchbox experiences, Helen? Or is that a case of, well, I can, but frankly, it was just very basic, very plain?
I do remember a lot of the time my yogurt would split and it would cover the entire contents of everything that was in my lunchbox. My lunchboxes, I think they were quite healthy. There was always one or two portions of fruit, and I think that was something my parents always said: make sure there's fruit in the lunchbox.
Yeah. The classic split yogurt scenario, always a great to actually work through that. And again, finally, Helen, in terms of people who have been intrigued by this particular thing and are obviously having a bit of a panic now as the school year starts and so on, where would you suggest people should actually go to find out more information about the Baby Bell research, and indeed some ideas to perhaps change the approach to their children's lunchbox?
Actually, on the Baby Bell Instagram page is a really good hack to school campaign with little hacks of not only what to put in the lunchbox, but things from how to get the kids out of the door easier and things like that.
It's also important, I suppose, to actually maintain in these days of obviously people being concerned about the obesity pandemic, etc., that healthiness needs to come to the fore as well. So getting that balance together with, as you mentioned, fussy eaters as well, is critical, really. Bear in mind that as all prospective human beings, if we put in a junk material, we'll get out junk material.
It is. And I think, like we were saying before, what you put into your body is going to then kind of not only go into your physical health, but your mental health. And I think having the awareness of mental health at the moment is really, really important. And there is a correlation between what you eat and that mental health aspect as well.
Yeah. Helen, it's been fabulous just sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Again, I'll congratulate you on, of course, I mean, two-time Olympic champion. Obviously, that was back in the days where our rowing teams were very good from that point of view. She's marvellous. You know, we need you more. We need more Helen Glovers. So huge thanks for that. Keep on keeping on, and happy lunchbox making.
Thank you.
don't have a lot, but with me that's fine. Whatever I got, well I know it's mine. Don't go around with a local crowd. I don't take what's in, so I guess I'm out. Saying these things so you know me, baby, so you understand what I'm all about. The boat that I row won't cross the ocean. The boat that I row won't get there that soon. But I got the love and you got the notion. The boat that I row's big enough for two. It's me and you. There ain't a man alive can tell me what to say. Choose my own side and I like it that way. I don't worry about all the things that I'm not. There's only one thing that I want and got. You know that I'm talking about you, baby. But you better know when you come along. The boat that I row won't cross the ocean. But I got the love and you got the notion. Both that I won't be on the floor. Do you understand what I'm all about? The boat that I